Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:44 p.m. on Friday, March 20th, 2026. And I believe we have a full House, which is Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Co-Chair Shragi, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. So we have two items on the agenda today. First, we're going to do public testimony for House Bill 21. That is the voter pre-registration for minors by Representative Story. And then we're going to return to amendments for Senate Bill 64. That is the elections bill. And so with that, I'd like to invite up Representative Story, if you'd like to please come up to the table and put yourself on the record. And if you could just give us a brief recap of the bill, just so that everyone's kind of on the same page, and then we'll go to public testimony. So with that, Representative Story.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Co-Chair Foster and members of the House Finance Committee. It's good to be before you today. For the record, I am Representative Andy Story, having the honor of representing District 3, which is the North, Juneau, Mendenhall Valley, Fritz Cove, Auk Bay, Out the Road, Haines, Skagway, Clockwan, and Gustavus. Thank you for hearing public testimony today on House Bill 21, Voter Pre-Registration for Minors. I believe we have a responsibility to protect democracy by taking active, intentional steps to prepare the next generation to participate in it. Timing matters. By allowing 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote while they are still rooted in the support systems of their families, schools, and communities, we can help them get involved and reduce the likelihood that they will overlook registration during the major life transitions that often come with turning 18. HB 21 is about building lifelong voters, strengthening civics education, increasing youth engagement, and reinforcing the idea that voting is fundamental to a healthy democracy in our state and in our country. This bill would allow 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote 3 months before they turn 18, as is our current process. They would get a letter in the mail asking if they still want to be pre-registered to vote. And they would have to sign a card that they do. They would get a self-addressed, they would get a postage paid envelope. And then if it doesn't come back, they're not pre-registered. As you know, people could move between the time they turn 16 and 18 to a different district or a different part of the state or out of state. And so and it goes into a separate file in the Division of Elections. And so it would not be public information until they turn 18. And they also, the DMV, when they go to register to drive, not register to drive, but get that wonderful life transition of a permit, they will have the option of being able to register to vote. So thank you for allowing me to make those brief remarks. And I will look forward to hearing public testimony. Thank you again.
Great. Thank you very much. So I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on House Bill 21. And I think we have two people, both of whom are in the room. Ms. Marion Claw, I believe. If you could maybe put yourself on the record, just state your name and your affiliation. Thank you for being here and providing your testimony.
Thank you. It's Marion Claw. And honorable members of the House Finance Committee, my name is Marion Claw from Auk Bay, Alaska. And I'm here today representing myself, testifying as a citizen, a voter, a mother, and a grandparent in support of House Bill 21. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this important issue. Every parent hopes that their children and grandchildren will grow up to be responsible, engaged citizens who exercise their precious right to vote. Who among us would not want this to be true? Yet Alaska currently has one of the most restrictive pre-registration voter laws of any jurisdiction in the nation. In fact, we are out of step with the overwhelming majority of voters of states. Here are the facts. 20 states and the District of Columbia allow pre-registration to commence at age 16. 25 states allow pre-registration to commence at age 17, as long as the voter will be turning 18 by the date of the election. By contrast, just 5 states allow pre-registration only if it is within 6 months of less or less of a person's 18th birthday. Excuse me. Of those 5 states, Alaska currently has one of the most restrictive laws in the entire nation, denying pre-registration until just 90 days before their 18th birthday. I'm sure you all may agree that there is nothing about Alaskan youth that makes them less responsible citizens than their compatriots across the 45 states that currently have far less restrictive voting pre-registration standards. Pre-registration increases turnout and engagement for young voters who sadly are historically the least likely to exercise their right to vote. Alaskans deserve similar rights to those that their peers already have almost everywhere else in the U.S. The American Constitutional Society had this to say on the issue. Voting is the cornerstone of our democracy. You can only have your voice and your needs reflected if you vote. Pre-registration is an important tool that allows people younger than 18 to vote as soon as they are eligible. In closing, I'd like to point out that this is absolutely not a red state, blue state issue. North Dakota, Utah, Louisiana, and Florida could hardly be called blue or even purple, lavender, or periwinkle. Yet each one of those states allows their young citizens to pre-register to vote starting at age 16. Alaskans deserve nothing less. Thank you for your time, your attention, and your public service.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions of the committee? I don't see any, so appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we have another person in the audience, and that is Madeline Bass. If you could come up and put yourself on the record and state your name and your affiliation and provide your testimony. Thanks for joining us here today.
Hello, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Madeline Bass. I'm from here in Juneau, and I'm here to testify as a young person in support of House Bill 21. Voting is a constitutional right. Being able to have your voice heard and your values represented by an elected leader is an opportunity that every U.S. citizen should have. Today, in Alaska, youth voters are consistently the lowest turnout out of any age group. Some youth do not vote because they feel their voice doesn't matter, some because they don't know enough to make an educated vote, and some because they simply do not have the time to pre-register before they turn 18. Of course, I don't blame them. I know that the time when you are about to turn 18 is one of the busiest times in a person's life, when you are likely dealing with your last year of high school, college applications, and even a job. Rural Alaskans likely have an even more difficult time registering before they turn 18, as internet and mail services sometimes are unreliable. By allowing Alaskans to pre-register to vote at 16 or 17, you are allowing them extra necessary time and the ability to take another stressful task off of their future self's plate. Earlier pre-registration also encourages young people to be more civically involved. If, at 16, a youth knows they will be voting in the next election, they are more likely to stay educated when it comes to politics, encouraging them to form their own opinions and exciting the idea of having the power to help elect leaders. Not only does this positively contribute to the voter turnout, as has been shown by the 15 other states, including D.C., that allow 16-year-olds to vote, but would also positively impact the youth themselves, as research from the National Institute of Health shows that civic engagement in adolescent years is associated with greater academic turnout, as well as a decrease in problem behaviors such as violence and drug use. As someone who's turning 16 this summer, I would love nothing more than to be able to exercise my civic right and civic engagement to be able to pre-register to vote. By passing this bill, you would ensure youth have the time they need to understand voting, politics, and voter registration, allow the private information of minors stay private until they turn 18, and you would be bolstering both civic engagement and voter turnout in our great state of Alaska. I urge you to vote in support of HB 21. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any comments, questions of the committee? I don't, Representative Moore?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Foster. I just want to say thanks for coming. I know you've been here a couple times to testify, and it's just so refreshing to see a young person coming and being this engaged on all topics. And I just really appreciate your presence here. So thank you.
Through the chair, thank you very much, Representative Moore.
Ditto on those remarks, Representative Moore. I don't see anything, Representative Hannon.
Well, I better chime in. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And of course, many of you do remember Ms. Bass from her testimony before us on the operating budget. And not to underscore, but she is 15. So I know that I'm going to need to get out of this seat in a big way in the near future to make way for the next generation of voters, the next generation of candidates, and the next representatives with ability and skills to serve her community proudly.
Great. Thank you. Okay. I don't see any further questions or comments, so appreciate your testimony. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who I may have missed who would like to testify? I don't see any. Anybody who would like to send in public testimony in written form via email, you can send us an email to house.finance@akleg.gov. One more time, house.finance@akleg.com. So just to give a little bit of a history on what we've done so far with this bill, we had the first hearing on April 22, 2025. We had a hearing on February 26 of this year, another hearing, let's see, March 20, I believe, is what is today. Today's March 20, so that's today. And that's public testimony is today. And then we'll be taking up the fiscal note at the next meeting. Also wanted to set an amendment deadline, and that would be for next Tuesday, March 24th at 5 p.m. Again, deadline for this bill would be March 24th. That's next Tuesday at 5 p.m. And so with that, we will next move on to our next bill, and that is Senate Bill 64. That's the elections bill. We left off this morning at the conclusion of amendment number 2. So I'd like to invite up again Senator Wilikowski, as well as his staff, Mr. David Dunsmore. And we'll set the other bill aside. So I just wanted to thank Representative Story for bringing that forward. We'll set that one aside for now. And I'll just give folks a moment to open up their Senate Bill 64 packets and refer to your amendments. Okay, so we are on amendment number 3, and amendment number 3 is by Representative Bynum. Representative Bynum, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. If it was okay, I would like to try to take amendment 3 a little bit later, try to get some of the other ones out of the way first. And so okay. If I would say that I'm not going to offer amendment 3 at this time, can I pick that up at a later time?
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Okay, so amendment number 3 will be held over. And so that takes us to amendment number 4. And amendment number 4 is by, let's see here, Representative Bynum, amendment number 4.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment number 4.
Object.
Okay, we have an objection. Representative Bynum, if you could please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Amendment number 4, effectively what amendment number 4 does is that I'm asking to limit when we can accept a ballot for the purposes of curing. So right now, after an election occurs, up to 10 days after the election, we allow ballots to be received and cured. And ultimately, one of the arguments that I've made through this process has been about how we treat ballots when they're coming in from rural communities versus how we treat them coming in from the urban communities, and the amount of time that it takes for us to communicate to rural voters. And I felt that through my comments and when we were talking about the bill, that there is this divide between how we treat different voters from different parts of the state. And one of the responses that we got was, as well, rural voters can just send their ballots in sooner to ensure that we can cure their ballot if there happens to be an issue. And that Co-Chair Foster did not sit very well with me. I do understand, however, that there are going to be challenges no matter what we do, given the current system that we have at hand and the availability of our mail service. So I'd just like to kind of get some perspective from some of the other committee members before we move forward. So,
okay. And maybe if I could ask this bill sponsor, Senator Wilikowski, if you can maybe touch on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage, joined by David Dunsmore from my office. And I appreciate, Rep. Bynum, through the chair, your concerns. You've raised great points about equal protection. My concern with this amendment is that it is, in my opinion, very likely unconstitutional. I believe it creates two classes of voters, one class of voter who gets their ballot in before Election Day and another who gets theirs in afterwards, and it treats them differently, which I believe violates our Constitution. That's number one. Number two, I believe, and I know what you're trying to get at, and I respect that in trying to treat rural voters fair, and we've strived to try to do that in this bill, and I think we've improved the quality of voting and the access issues in rural Alaska through a variety of things. But I think this would actually make things worse for those in rural Alaska, because they're the ones whose ballots are more likely to be delayed by mail or by weather. And they would very likely probably be the ones more detrimentally impacted by this amendment. So I would not support this amendment.
Okay. Do we have any other further Representative Hannon? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Jimmy and then Hannon. I'm sorry. Representative Jimmy.
Boyana Co-Chair Foster. Amendment 4. Out in rural, we're told the postal services are openly tells rural Alaskans that Priority Express services are not beholden to the market guarantees in remote areas. And we all know that ballots arrive late in rural Alaska because the geography is real and the planes don't always fly due to weather, mechanical breakdowns, or just the schedule shifts last minute and they can't fly there. So there's a community in Delta called Platinum, and there's 55 people and there's not a post office there. And to mail a ballot, they have to cross 11 miles of open water by boat or snow machine, depending on the weather. As we know, we could see the Juneau weather here is different, to reach Good News Bay to mail their ballot in. And to me, this amendment makes the curing window meaningless for those voters.
Go ahead. Okay, thank you, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I guess I am concerned that we are treating two kinds of ballots. We're making it more challenging. So if your ballot didn't arrive by Election Day, but by law it's allowed to arrive for 10 more days, you don't get the opportunity to cure. I think we got to treat all ballots of a category the same and have the same time frames. So if you were changing the deadline, which I don't support and I'm not advocating for, that's one thing. But there's the potential that someone's ballot arrived the day after election, but they now happen to be somewhere where they could show up and cure their ballot. Frequently, my husband always votes absentee because November is hunting season. And, you know, the Anchorage Airport is one of those places where a lot of people hub through. And, gosh, you found out that your absentee ballot needs to be cured and you could walk down to the Division of Elections in Anchorage the day after the election, 2 days later, and cure your ballot. But if it arrived a day later, you can't. I just think that making it harder and diminishing some ballots is the wrong direction. I appreciate the members' attempt to make sure that we're allowing some curing to get through, but I can't support the amendment.
Next up, Representative Allard.
Thank you, and through the chair. So first, I'd like to say that you'd have to believe in curing or not believe in curing in order to support some of the stuff in this particular amendment. I do support the amendment because I want every Alaskan to be treated equally. And for me, this amendment is working in that direction. And so that's really all I have to say. So I would be supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Stout.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Foster, I'm just going to, through the chair, to rep the sponsor. If you could explain to me, I guess the provision may be a little bit better. The way I read it is, in order to cure your ballot has to be, and this is regarding absentees, your absentee has to be received by the Division of Elections at the close of business on election day. I guess why not use postmark by election day? Is there a timing issue here? Because it is a little weird to talk about how I can only cure my ballot if it gets there on election day, but I can still, other ballots can count if they get there 10 days after. Through the chair. Thanks.
Representative Bynum.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. The challenge was is that of trying to deal with how do we treat all people equally on this, and it's this provision wasn't put in place to prohibit ballots from coming in after election day. It was only to say that all ballots that come in after election day would be treated equally, meaning you wouldn't be doing curing. And the reason for that was because of the ability to get a curing of a ballot done for a rural Alaskan versus an urban Alaskan. There potentially are unequal treatment there. And that was the intent of this amendment and the intent, and also the opportunity to really talk about that potential inequity.
Okay. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I would just want to thank the maker of the amendment and also come into agreement with Representative Jimmy that I think that this is just doesn't really make sense for Alaska. And as rural as we are, and by the end of the election day, we can't even count all of our ballots by the end of the election day. So we have a lot of problems and issues, and I don't think this kind of convolutes the intent of the maker's bill here. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Jimmy?
Yes, just a remark. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just a remark that there is no equality in the mail service in Alaska. Just pointing that. Thanks.
Okay, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, for the opportunity to bring the amendment forward. Again, I just want to highlight that there definitely is inequity in how we are able to treat rural voters versus urban voters. And after talking with the sponsor of the bill and his staff and the legal opinion that was being referenced, or the legal conversation that was being referenced, I believe that was in conjunction with legal. I will withdraw amendment number 4.
Okay, amendment number 4 has been withdrawn. Thank you. And so with that, we'll next go to amendment number 5, and that is by Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment number 5.
Okay. And is there an objection?
Check.
We've got an objection. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Amendment number 5 restores the language providing the information shared with the Division of Elections from the permanent fund dividend applicants will apply to the applicants who are U.S. citizens, number 1, and number 2, 18 years of age, or will be so within 90 days of the date of application. And if it was possible, if Division of Elections is online, I'd like to get their feedback on amendment number 5.
Okay, Ms. Carol Beecher, if you can put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon. This is Carol Beecher, for the record, Director of the Division of Elections. Through the chair, Representative Bynum, in regards to this amendment, restoring the requirement that the individual is a citizen of the United States and is at least 18 years of age or will be within 90 days. We believe that this will restore it to the way that we currently do it, which means that we will get the list that is filtered for only United States citizens and only those who are 18 years and older. As it is currently written in the bill, we would receive the entire permanent fund dividend list, which would include children, information from children and any individuals who are also not U.S. citizens. So it would require the division to do the filtering. So that would be the impact of this bill.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I was hoping that maybe the sponsor or the senator or his staff would be able to comment on the amendment as well.
Okay. I'd just like to note really quick that we also have Representative Colom with us again. Thanks for joining us. And was that going to be Senator Wilikowski?
I'll take the first crack at it, okay. Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Bill Wilikowski, for the record. Representative Bynum, appreciate you bringing this amendment forward. We view this as a favorable. We support this amendment. And one of the concerns that we're trying to address in this bill is we don't want a situation where people are inadvertently who are not eligible to vote yet are on the permanent fund rolls being added to the voter rolls. That's been a concern that's been expressed to us from the Division of Elections. I think it's a valid concern, and we would be supportive of this amendment.
Okay. Do we have any further comments, questions regarding amendment number 5? Okay, seeing none, Representative Stapp, do you maintain your objection?
No.
Okay. Hearing no further objections, amendment number 5 to Senate Bill 64 has been adopted. So that next takes us to amendment number 6, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment number 6.
Okay, we have no objection. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Amendment number 6 makes all sections of the Act to take effect immediately, with the exception of number 1, the sections regarding the ballot carrying and tracking. This will take effect on for the 2026 primary and the 2026 REAA elections would then not be. This will be taking effect after the 2026 primary and the 2026 REAA elections. It lists in the amendment that there's an effective date of October 19th, 2026. Second portion of this is that the section related to the TrueSource provision will remain the same in the bill and does not change. Co-Chair Foster, I have an amendment for this, Amendment 1. I would move Amendment 1 of Amendment 2, Amendment 6.
Okay, maybe if folks can
check.
Okay, we have an objection to Amendment number 1 to Amendment number 6. I'm going to let folks just take a moment to find that in your packets here. Mm-hmm. I believe it's conceptual Amendment number 1 to Amendment number 6. And if folks have that, I'll give it another moment. Make sure everybody's got that in writing here.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
I think I withdraw the objection.
Okay, the objection has been withdrawn. Let's see.
I'll object. I'd like to hear the sponsor discuss it.
Okay. We have another objection. And so with that, wanted to make sure, Representative Bynum, do you have anything before I go to the senator? Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So the Amendment 1 to Amendment 6, the reason I'm bringing this amendment forward is because in the original amendment, I used the date of October 19th. After discussion with the sponsor of the bill and my staff, we realized that although October 19th, which was what was came back from legal, that created a conflict in the bill because of early absentee request that's 45 days prior to an election. And so what this amendment does is it makes a correction to that. and it moves the date to September 19th, 2026, which is 45 days prior to the general election. And it also exempts the October 2026 REAA elections from the requirement. And the reason it does that is because the requirement for absentee for the REAA would then come into effect. And so we begin to cascade backwards. And so all this does is correct that date to allow for the 45 days for the absentee ballot to be tracked. Because we don't want to send out partial ballots to be not tracked and then other ballots to be tracked. And so that's basically what this amendment does.
Okay, so with regard to the conceptual amendment number one to amendment number six, Senator Wilikowski, any thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, we did consult with the sponsor of the conceptual amendment, Representative Bynum, and we would support this conceptual amendment. We think the way the amendment is currently written is not workable, but with this conceptual amendment, we believe it could be workable.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster, Co-Chair Foster. My question, I think, is for the maker of the underlying amendment, who is also the maker of the conceptual amendment. And I'm just trying to understand, because without amending the bill, the effective date of the curing process is August 31st, which is at least 45 days prior to the general election. So I'm trying to understand if the only thing he's trying to capture in the amendment is exemption of the REAA election, or if he's trying to change the overall, because in reading the effective date, I'm trying to figure out why we wouldn't go with the August date.
Representative Bynum.
Co-Chair Foster, I can discuss the full intent of the original amendment now, or would like me to wait until after the conceptual amendment for the date?
Maybe let's go ahead and take care of the conceptual amendment. And so I believe there was an objection.
I had an objection. I'll remove my objection just to the conceptual amendment to Amendment 6.
Okay. So conceptual amendment number one has been adopted. That takes us to the underlying amendment, which is amendment number 6. Representative Bynum.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So the reason that this amendment was brought forward is because the way that the current law or statute is reading is that we have this delayed effective date that we have to wait for until it goes into effect. And the reason that we did that was because when there was testimony from the Division of Elections, there was concerns about whether or not they were able to implement sections of this bill in time. But when we asked specifically at the Division of Elections, were there elements in this bill which weren't going to be impacted by delay, they listed basically everything in the bill could be done now with the exception of True Source, which was already delayed, and the ballot curing and the ballot tracking mechanisms that they needed additional time to implement those things. And so what this amendment basically does is it conforms with that. And we wanted to make sure that we have enough time for example, that the division could start doing the all the other elements of the bill immediately, and that we wouldn't get caught up with trying to implement a tracking system and a ballot curing system that would impact the REAA elections, because then we would need to roll this back even further. So that's what the intent here is, so that we can move everything in the bill and get it moving forward, and that there would be a delayed effect for the department to be able to put into place a ballot curing procedure and also a ballot tracking system in time for the general election in November.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. To the maker, I guess I am still struggling to understand why the August 31st date doesn't work, but September 19th makes it work, with the exception of you're now exempting the REAAs. But the current version, unamended, the True Source isn't touched, because that's January 27. The regs get going, perpetuated as effective immediately, and the effective date for the ballot curing provisions are August 31st. So I'm trying to figure out what 19 more days in September changes, except for you're asking for the REA election to be excluded.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. It's because when we roll this back, there's going to be a requirement for absentee ballots for the REAs, and the Division of Elections expressed concerns about the time to implement. This ensures that the Division of Elections has time to make sure that our ballot tracking system and our ballot carrying system is adequately in place for the general election without any issues. We don't. What this is intending to do is to ensure that all elements of the bill can happen immediately with the exception of those two items and, of course, the true source, and that we are not going to impact the ability of the division to implement those things because of them having to also run an REA election. So that was the intended purpose here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and with respect to amendment number 6 that's been modified, Senator Wilikowski, any further thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the working with the maker of the amendment, and we did have an opportunity to talk with legal. We were concerned about the October 19 date that was proposed, asked that be extended, appreciate that was extended. I have not had an opportunity to just confirm with the division once again that they can comply with this. I know they've said it in the past, but if it might be worth hearing from them again that they can comply with this, Mr. Chairman, it's up to the committee, but I would not want to be in a situation where they somehow say something's changed, we can't comply with it. If they're on the call, that I would appreciate that clarification.
Okay. Ms. Carol Beecher, if you can put yourself on the record.
For the record, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, thank you for the question on that. The division, as you know, we are currently in the middle of the election season now. And the calendar is quite full and gets more full as it goes along. We do have a lot of concerns about implementing any system during an election year. If this goes into law, then we would immediately, as written, begin the work of putting these systems into place to the degree possible. So we would certainly do our best and in getting something implemented, but it will be a real challenge for the division in an election year.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Ms. Beecher, Andy Josephson here. Just to clarify, what I heard earlier this week was the division could not do what I think of as the electronic curing portion prior to the coming August primary, but that it could meet that obligation as to and fully comply with the law as to meet the November general election. And what you've just said is something less reassuring than that. Can you reassure me of your previous comment?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't recall exactly what my words were, but I have been consistently stating that getting something implemented via a system and implementing a system will be extremely challenging for the division due to the press of the calendar that we have and because of the limited amount of staff that we have for IT who are focused on simply implementing the elections that we have. For example, the Uecava ballot for the primary start to go out on the 12th. And you can imagine all of the pre-work that goes in before that. We are hiring and training staff. We then have the early voting that starts the beginning of August. And then after that, then we still have ballots coming in for 10 days. After that, we have the withdrawal date is September 1. So we immediately go then into the REA election. I'm just stating all of this to show that we have a very full calendar on an election year. We will do our best, and we'll to comply with the law.
Okay. Okay. Before we go to wrap up, any further questions or comments on Amendment Number 6, Senator Wilikowski?
Mr. Chairman, and my recollection, I think, was similar to the recollection of Representative Josephson, Co-Chair Josephson. The way I understood the Division of Elections was that they said they could implement the entirety of the bill with the exception of they had concerns about ballot tracking and ballot curing. I think through discussion, and that's the way I understand that I'm hearing them now. They're saying that. I think that's what, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Beecher, when I'm finished. But the just to allay some of the concerns and of the committee and the public, we estimate there's anywhere from 500 to 1,000 ballots that will need to be cured. There's five new workers that are appropriated for under this bill in the fiscal note. We believe that's more than enough to handle the very small number of ballots that might be cured. So we think that deals with the ballot curing issue. On the ballot tracking, my office reached out. And, well, first of all, we had commitments from the lieutenant governor that as long as this was passed in this month, that they would be able to implement it. That's number one. And that comports with the information that we've gotten. We've reached out just this week to several ballot tracking organizations that track ballots for other states and local communities throughout the country, including Anchorage. We were informed by at least two of them that they would be able to implement a ballot tracking system with the state of Alaska if this bill were passed. In fact, one of them said they can implement it for the primary election as long as it were passed by May 28th of this year and signed into law. So we believe there's plenty of time. We have complete confidence that the department will be able, the Division of Elections and the Lieutenant Governor will be able to fully implement this law as it's written. We don't want to delay it too long, but we have full confidence that they'll be able to do that based on the information that we've been provided.
Ms. Beecher, did you have any comments?
Thank you. Through the chair, Darrell Beecher. Yes, just to note that I did not testify that there would be absolutely no problem with implementing the system for the general. I appreciate Senator Wilikowski's comments that the vendors have said that they can implement things, but I have also dealt with vendors before and they want to sell you their product, so they will often speak that something is simple that is not. And we have found certainly that anything having to do with IT and systems often has complications that were not anticipated when you initially talked with the vendor. But given all of that, that our concerns remain, we certainly appreciate as much time as possible and would do our best to make sure that it was implemented as required by the law.
Okay, thank you. I've got Representative Galvin, Jimmy, and Allard. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I just wanted to note that following some questioning earlier by Representative Bynum, I have notes from asking about this specifically because I wanted to make sure that, you know, we weren't having expectations that were too high, you know, and so I asked whether 5 months seemed like it would be doable. And what my notes here in three different places say, with stars around them, yes, except for curing and ballot tracking. So I feel like I know this is a tough thing to try to push a new system, and I wouldn't want to push it too fast, but I also know that the state's been waiting for a long time on some systems that feel like have higher integrity. And so when I look at this amendment, I feel like it puts, it crosses the T and dots the I and puts us where we need to be to add more certainty around that. And I fully support this amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Jimmy.
Boyana, Co-Chair Foster, and my question would be directed to Director Beecher. Is the supervisor position filled for districts 37, 38, 39, and 40.
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, we are in the middle of the hiring process for that position.
And is there a timeline or is there a certain date you have to hire somebody?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, there's a whole hiring process that we follow. And we clearly would like to have that position filled as soon as possible. We anticipate having it filled by beginning of May.
Question?
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And how long has this position been open?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, we lost our previous supervisor in November of 2025.
And you said 2025?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, yes, November of 2025.
Thank you.
Okay, next up I've got Representative Allard, Josephson, and Shiragi. Did I miss anyone? Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Allard.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is for Ms. Beecher because I remember things quite differently too during your hearings, but could you tell me if during any time of your testimony in any of the hearings that you said you can implement this bill before the general election?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, just to make sure that I'm clear, that we have testified that the provisions of the bill besides the system, we believe that we can certainly implement. So I want to be clear on that. It sounds like there was some confusion on what I may have said in regards to the other elements of the bill. The area that we have consistently talked about the challenges involved has to do with implementing a system on an election year. So our challenge is not implementing a system per se, it is the time frame of doing it during an election year. And that is something that will be a real challenge for the division to accomplish. We're concerned about things like the testing, which requires staff to test it to make sure that it's working properly. To do that, it takes time. It takes staff who are also in the middle of ensuring that the election is being run properly for the three different elections we have. So we continue to have those concerns. We, as I've noted, will do our very best. But those are certainly concerns the committee should be aware of, is that we are in the middle of an election year already.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Representative Josephson, Shiragi, Tomaszewski, and Stapp. Representative Josephson?
Yes, a question for the sponsor, Representative Bynum. Representative Bynum, you mean by the amendment which we've adopted to the amendment to exempt just this coming fall's REAA election. So that would be like a rural school board. And so I was unaware because it wasn't something I thought about, but the division apparently has oversight of rural school board elections, and they would not need to track or cure just this fall's rural school board elections. Is that part of what you're doing here?
That is correct.
Okay. Follow.
Okay. And just for the record, that was Representative Bynum with the answer, Representative Josephson.
And just could you clarify as to Representative Hannon's question, is it your belief that if we give the division 19 more days, they'll be more likely to comply with the electronic curing portion? Is that but of course, yeah, is that your intent to give them 19 more days than the current version of the bill's August 31 deadline to comply?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So what we did was is when we went and looked at the bill on page 17, line 28, that's section 37. 37 says that the bill, the whole bill takes effect in August, mm-hmm. end of August. Mm-hmm. And so what we did is we said we want the whole bill to take effect immediately. But then there were these issues that we have to deal with. Number one is TrueSource, and one the other one has to do with the ballot carrying and the ballot tracking. And what we did there then is because we're basically amending this section where we're saying August. We said, how much time do we need to make sure that we actually have when these systems go into effect, how much time do we need before the general election to be able to implement those effectively? And that was 45 days before the general election. That's how we arrived at the September 19th date. Now, a byproduct of that was obviously a benefit of additional time to the division of 19 days, 20 days of saying you now have an additional 20 days or 19 days to implement ballot tracking and ballot carrying into law so that we can use it for the November election.
All right, follow up. Of course, there's no ballots to cure or track between August 31 and September 19. Is there?
Representative Bynum?
Through the chair, the answer is there. If when we put that date in play, the answer is no. There are no ballots to track if we're exempting the REA elections. But we wanted to be sure and very clear that this system is in place before ballots go out. And it gives the division as much possible time to make sure that happens and that we were not going to then be including the October 26 REA election because we didn't want it to create a problem.
All right. So, thank you.
Okay. My next question is from Representative Shragi.
Pass for now.
Okay, pass. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I have a question maybe to the division about vacancies, excuse me, and the temporary staff. Now, the sponsor of the bill talked about the five personnel, our temporary staff for managing the curing process. And I would like to just have a little bit of information on the vacancy rates already. Apparently, we're missing some from the representative from 37, 38, 39 district. We're missing some personnel there. I just wanted to touch a little bit or get some information on the temporary staff. How easy is it to find election workers and teach them a new system in this amount of time?
And that question is for Ms. Beecher. Ms. Beecher.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Shragi, we begin hiring temporary staff usually around May for each of the regions. And depending on the region, it can be really challenging. Or it just depends because it's a lot of hours that they end up working and it's only a temporary position. So there's kind of a different swath of the population that is available to do temporary work of this nature. For training, it will certainly depend on the system and how easy it would be to use. I would note also that although the bill calls for the fiscal note calls for the five extra staff, that it's not just a simple division of dividing however many ballots there may be for the absentee ballots by the five, because the majority of them could come into Anchorage. And according to the cure process, if 600 of them came into Anchorage in one batch, it would then require that those were notified within 24 hours. So it's not necessarily an even distribution of the work involved either.
Okay, that definitely follow-up.
Oh, and just for the record, the question is asked by Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Tomaszewski?
Yeah, thank you for that answer, Director Beecher. I appreciate that. It kind of gives a lot of insight into really the amount of work and the amount of issues that we may be dealing with definitely in an election year seems very problematic. So thank you.
Okay, I would also like to note that we have with us Representative Eichheit in the audience. Thanks for joining us. Representative Stapp, question?
Yep, thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair, I guess Director Beecher, I feel a little less confident in today's answers than I think I did the other day's answers. But I guess my first question is, the way I read this amendment is it's trying to maybe help you guys avoid, and these are my words, so feel free to not use them, but a train wreck scenario in the event that you can't get, like, the software done right and the personnel's not there, and now all of a sudden we're out of compliance and you can't do the curing and you can't do that, and then it just ends in a big disaster. So my question is, like, does this help you avoid a train wreck scenario if we were to change this effective date, or is it more likely just to leave it as it is through the chair?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, if we were to go to the ideal time frame for the division for implementing a system, it would be in 27. When this bill was first introduced and talked about a bill tracking mechanism, the desire of the division and the statements that we had in our fiscal note were that it really needed to happen in 25, to pass in 25. That would have given us the remaining of year of that year when we don't have elections except for the REAA election to fully implement it, test it, make sure that it's auditable, and all the things that will be necessary for something that involves curing somebody's ballot. So it is not a situation of whether or not the division would like to implement. It is really just a practical consideration of the reality that we need to make sure that it works and it works well, and that during an election year is not a great time to choose to implement something new that requires IT and all of the components involved.
Follow up?
Representative Stapp?
That sounds scary. Thanks.
Do we have any further comments or questions before we go to wrap up on amendment number 6?
I'm not sure I heard an answer really to the last question. I think what I heard was that the preference is that it doesn't take effect until next year. But the question was, do you prefer the effective date in this amendment or the effective date in the bill? And I didn't hear an answer to that question.
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, thank you. I believe that was Representative Strage. Having the effective date be immediate would allow the division to begin the whole process. So I suppose I'm not sure that it really helps, but it does make the time frame longer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, regarding amendment number 6, do we have any further discussion?
Can I have a brief at ease?
We're going to take brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 2:46 p.m., and we are taking up amendments on SB 64. And I think we're going to go to Senator Wilikowski next. And let me see if I was missing anything here. And we're on amendment number 6. So, Senator Wilikowski, you've got some comments. Oh, really quick, I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to welcome Representative Garrett Nelson to the audience. He's got three of his family members with him, three of the kids. So welcome to House Finance. Thanks for being here. With that, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I think the division reiterated what they've stated in the last few times they've appeared, which is that they can enact the entirety of this bill. Their concerns are with the ballot tracking and ballot curing, which is something that they've said. And sometimes as policymakers, we have to prod our divisions and departments to do things in a little more expeditious way than they currently are. We feel comfortable, we feel confident that they can enact those two provisions for a variety of reasons. Number one, on the ballot curing, as I've mentioned, they've got 5 new people, and there's roughly between 500 and 1,000 ballots to be cured. We think with the extended time that we have in this bill to allow them to start processing ballots 12 days in advance, even if they don't have a system in place, they can do this without any problem at all. With the ballot tracking, as I've mentioned, we've contacted organizations. We feel the vendors are ready and able to do this. But I want to remind this body, because this is something that hasn't come out, the Division of Elections did ballot tracking in 2020. They did it in the 2020 election. This is not an entirely new concept to them. And they did it without a statute in the books. So we feel very comfortable that they can do this. We're not concerned. The advantage is we didn't have a real strong, and we still don't have a real strong position on the amendment. We'll support it because we've heard from several members that they would rather have this started earlier rather than later. The advantages of getting it started earlier, we think, are number one, it allows the division to start cleaning up the voter rolls earlier, which I know is a concern for many people, but it also allows them to start hiring poll workers earlier. It allows them to hire a rural liaison earlier. There's a provision in here dealing with ballot booths that will enable them to go ahead and start getting cleaned up. It allows them to increase the pay for poll workers if necessary earlier. So we think these are benefits. So on the whole, we see this as a positive amendment that we think effectuates what we're trying to get at. And so we would support it.
Okay, thank you. So before we go to wrap up, any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Appreciate everybody's conversation on this particular amendment. For all the reasons the senator had said, I support stand behind the intent of the amendment. And, you know, I think that if we get into a situation where the division is going to need something to make sure that we're complying with the law, they just need to let us know what resource they're going to need. And, you know, I think we should be providing that resource. So I appreciate the opportunity to bring the amendment forward.
Great. Thank you. I forgot who had the objection. Does anybody object? Representative Stapp, did you have an objection to the motion? Representative Stapp?
I'm going to withdraw my objection, I think.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds like a very definitive withdrawing of the objection. I don't hear any further objections. So with that, amendment number 6 to Senate Bill 64 has been adopted. And we had two amendments that we held. That was amendment number 1 by Tomaszewski and amendment number 3, which was Bynum. So with that, we're going to first check in with Representative Tomaszewski and see if you wanted to.
Co-Chair Foster, just very quickly, sure. On the prior amendment, just to be clear, we adopted amendment 6 as amended. Is that important for the record?
Thank you. That is important for the record. So amendment number 6 has been adopted as amended by conceptual amendment number 1. So thank you for that clarification. So Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment 1.
Check.
Okay. We have an objection. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Amendment 1 is really a simple amendment, even though it is a few pages long. Most of the wordage on this amendment is actual law. We're just changing a few key points So the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend Automatic Voter Registration System, approved by voters in 2016 via ballot measure one, automatically registers eligible applicants to vote or updates their registration when they apply for the annual PFD, unless they actively opt out. Every year, 20 to 30,000 PFD applications are rejected for reasons such as residency issues and excessive absences from the state. It makes no sense to automatically register every PFD applicant as an AK voter. And every year, it causes problems for the Division of Elections. Every year, it takes resources to go through this list and determine whether or not they are actually registered voters. So main criticisms about this process is it the risk of inadvertently registering ineligible individuals, and that causes a lot of work for the Division of Elections. And we also have to look at the high cost that this takes. High cost with a low return. The program has been called inefficient and expensive. For example, one audit review noted that in 2019, the state spent around $1.5 million to register about 4,600 voters who actually cast ballots. So basically, the state paid about $323 per vote on those voters. There's also a lot of privacy and data concerns with this. We have had data breaches, and also we have had the state turn over voter data to Department of Justice. And there's a lot of folks out there. There's a lot of Alaskans that do not agree with this, and they don't want their information turned over to the Division of Justice, and they don't want their privacy breached. I mean, we had a breach just within the last couple of years, and we actually didn't even get notified till after the election. So this is a problem, and the implementation of it really burdens the system. And I just look forward to a vigorous debate on whether what you think about this amendment. So thank you.
Okay, if I could maybe first get Senator Wilikowski's thoughts, and then we'll maybe start from right to left. I think it was Representative Jimmy Josephson, and was that Bynum? Okay, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, this was the product of a ballot initiative that received the most number of ballots and votes in the history of the state. Every year, 7,000 roughly Alaskans opt out and decide not to do this. When this bipartisan elections bill was discussed, and it was again, this is the product of a lot of negotiation, a lot of give and take. Both sides had things that they absolutely wanted and that they absolutely couldn't live with. And the reality is, I wanted ballot boxes in Arabic. I wanted 20 ballot boxes in Anchorage. I wanted witness signature removed. I wanted same-day voter registration. I didn't get any of those things. What we got was a good government bill. This upsets the balance of that process. I will withdraw the bill if this passes, to put it very bluntly, Mr. Chairman. This is a deal breaker. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to back up here. I've got on the far right Representative Galvin. First, go ahead.
Well, thank you. I was very happy to be a part of the celebration of this initiative when it passed. And I'll tell you why. At the time, my children were ages, let's see, I think 16, 14, 11, and 8. And what I knew was that all of their friends, unless they opted out, which of course is very easy, you click that drop down button and you choose to opt out when you apply for your PFD. But otherwise, I knew that all them and their friends were going to be automatically signed up to vote, real simply. And as someone who has also served as a registrar in the state for years and years trying to get folks to sign up to vote, I just think it's such an important part of our democracy. I'm very proud to have this in our state because I think it's a key part of what makes Alaska strong is that folks can, with ease, be signed up to vote. So I understand the concerns around confidentiality, and I think we have lots of things in place for that. And certainly, if you don't like it, then you simply say no, thank you. But otherwise, the 18-year-olds who are signing up for their PFD get to have this option of voting and don't have to go through all of the mess we heard about earlier today if they forget during their transitions in life because they're starting college or their first job. There's so many things that get 18-year-olds. They're in their trades. They're working sometimes more than one job. And so I appreciate the ease with which this system allows folks to be signed up to vote. I would like to see even more 18 to 40-year-olds certainly voting right now because we're accountable to them. And I would like to have their voice in to the decisions that we're making even more. So I will be a no vote, but I do appreciate the concerns around privacy. And I think that largely that's taken care of because I don't think that the data gets shared. Well, I think that there was somewhere else where we just were going to share only for those who were eligible to start voting. So anyway, I'm going to be a no vote on this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jimmy.
Guyana, Co-Chair Foster. In 2022, my district had 17% of their voters' ballots rejection. And to put that in perspective, that's one out of six ballots thrown in the trash, told their vote doesn't matter because it wasn't filled out correctly or something. But the PFD registration pathway exists because my constituents do not have a DMV or a voter registration to go to in our villages. But the voters did pass in 2016 because they understood what rule is, what rule our way of life out there is, the voting system. And I don't see how adding one more step between rural voters and the voter rolls is improving the situation. So removing automatic registration from that process is a choice of whose vote we want. For that reason, I will have to be a no vote.
Okay, thank you. Representative Josephson.
Yes, I'm a no vote as well. I mean, one of the things going door to door the last 14 years is having conversations with folks who are admittedly indifferent about voting and our political process. But often I do remind them they're eligible because they concede that they are PFD recipients. And that tends to prolong the conversation. We get into some policy questions and discussions. Often they're completely unaware. And so maybe some of those decided to be excited by the prospect of voting. I'm disinclined to interfere with an initiative. I know we're empowered to do that at this point, but I'm disinclined to do it. Some of the things the sponsor noted that there would be essentially ineligible voters. You know, I think most of the data says that there just aren't ineligible voters voting, with some exceptions. We've heard about the Whittier cases, for example. But for example, I was in a long relationship with someone in the 90s. She received PFDs. She was a British subject. She knew she couldn't vote. She wasn't going to try to vote, but she was going to get her dividend. People understand that difference. And then as to a concern, well, first of all, the bill itself is curative, if I could use that word, of some of these concerns that ineligible voters will begin to vote. That's the bill works at that, pushing against that. And as to the Justice Department data request, I think that's not particularly relevant. I mean that's a whole other animal, and the greater concern is that it ever happened, not that people's PFD data per se was delivered. It was the happening of it at all that was the problem. So I'm not supportive of the amendment.
Okay, next up I have Representative Bynum and then Stapp. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I just wanted to, for the sponsor of the amendment, wanted to just make sure and validate, because I was looking at the amendment, it's kind of a big amendment. Just wanted to make sure that this is basically just taking the automatic part and making it an optional check. So when I actually go to apply, that I'm just checking that I want to also register to vote. I'd want to verify that first. And then the second thing is there any other complications that may arise from doing that that coincide with the current bill?
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Yes, it is an opt-in. And the only thing that this is going to do is going to free up a lot of Division of Election folks from having to manually go through 20 to 30,000 applications every year and to garner whether they are actually eligible to vote. So yes, opt in, and yes, it's going to free up a lot of election workers' time.
Okay, Representative Stapp and then Shragi.
I think Co-Chair Foster, I guess I'm going to have questions to the sponsor of the amendment. Yeah, I was going through this amendment wondering what the big change was, and it seems to me that you're still allowing them to register to vote by applying for the dividend. You're just making them check a box that says, hey, I want to register to vote, applying the dividend. I just applied for my PFD, and I almost missed the box that I didn't want to update my voter registration, because last year my spouse ended up changing herself to Juno, which made my re-election a little weird, by the way, when we both went to vote. And that was done because she put her Juno address in when we filled out the PFD applications, and then not everyone in my family household could vote for me. Let's put it that way, right? So I kind of feel like, you know, that was like an inadvertent mistake, because it's an opt-out, right? Ended up changing her registration to someplace not in Fairbanks. And then, so I think it'd probably be safer to avoid that. I know I would have appreciated that not happening last year. So I'm going to be a yes. Thank you.
I've got Representative Shragi and then Hannon. Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Picking up where the last representative left off, to the bill sponsor, can you talk about how that prior concern is addressed in this bill, or if it is? And we'll start there.
Mr. Dunsmore, if you can put yourself on the record.
Through the chair, Representative Shragi, for the record, David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilikowski. This bill does have provisions addressing some of the concerns that Representative Tomaszewski expressed about the effect of accuracy on the voter rolls, caused by the PFD registration process. This was something that in the bipartisan negotiations that resulted in this bill, the compromise that was agreed to is Section 7 of the B version, which is at the top of page 5 is the substantive portion, which clarifies that for purposes of our voter roll statutes, merely applying for a permanent fund dividend does not constitute as contacting the division. So where there's inactivity or other indication that someone might not be eligible, registering for a PFD, applying for a PFD would not stop the division from being able to implement that voter roll cleanup process. And that was the compromise that was reached. With regards to some of the issues the Representative Stapp raised, they're definitely in the past, the implementation wasn't great, and there was more confusion. It stems from the fact that the PFD application asks for a physical address, whereas voting asked for a residence address, so it's not immediately clear. How they've now improved the form is you now get to a page where it explicitly tells you that your physical address is going to be assumed to be your residence address if you don't, and it gives you an option. It's no longer a drop-down menu. It is an option that shows. We believe that's an improvement. Another improvement they've made is to help prevent people from inadvertently checking the yes, they are a citizen box because they believe that's the closest thing to their status. They've now administratively added a box for people to check that they are a national but not a citizen of the United States, which that is a change that has been done administratively. Also, in the discussion about whether this would lead to efficiency or cost savings by switching from an opt-out to an opt-in system, there would probably be very little cost savings as a result of this amendment. There might be a little bit on postage saved for sending notices, but the division, both the PFD division and the Division of Elections, would still be required to maintain this program, so we wouldn't expect that there would be a significant fiscal impact from this change.
Thank you, Mr. Dunsmore. Appreciate that. And it sounds like if this bill were to pass as is and as amended so far, that many of the concerns highlighted so far with regards to automatic voter registration would be addressed. And even more glad that I believe all of Representative Staff's family would then be able to vote for him next year or this year, given some of the updates to the application form that warms my heart, I must say. As to the underlying amendment, I mean, I think the question for me is, do you want Alaskan residents who are residents by the mere fact that they're applying for the permanent fund dividend to be registered to vote? Do you want more Alaskan residents registered to vote or fewer Alaskan residents registered to vote? And from where I sit, I think I want more Alaskan residents registered to vote. I think that's a good thing. I would hate to have a young person or a young parent who's got a million things going on. I can think just of my last week with work and sick kids and a sick wife, forgetting to apply to vote in the next election. And I think the permanent fund dividend application and the automatic voter registration that we have is a wonderful thing because it greatly reduces the chance that someone is going to go to the ballot box to vote because they're motivated on an important issue that has come up in their life and they're suddenly motivated to engage in our democracy in a more direct way and begin voting, and for them to get there and to find out that they're not registered to vote. And I think that's why I ultimately oppose this amendment, is because I think it's more likely that Alaskan residents, similar to Representative Staff's wife, would not see the box that says, yes, I'd like to opt in to register to vote. I think a lot, if we make this change as proposed in this amendment, more people are going to not see that box, not register to vote, and be more likely to show up at the ballot box and be denied the ability to vote in that election. And that's problematic. And I think the proof of that is that the sponsor of the amendment said that one of the benefits of this amendment is that there would be a greatly reduced number of applications to vote that the Division of Elections would have to process. And the only reason that I can come up with that there would be many fewer applications to vote is because there's many people missing that box, opting in to update or to apply to register to vote. And that's challenging to me. I want to make sure that Alaskans are able to vote when they want to vote. If they're Alaskan residents, and they are if they're applying for the dividend, they should be registered to vote, unless, of course, they don't want to, and already there's an ability to opt out. And I think that's probably the better structure, to have it be an opt out, not an opt in, which will ultimately reduce the number of people registered. Thank you.
Got Representative Hannon and then Ellard. Representative Hannon handles.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And I guess I should start with, I'm sorry to lose Naomi Staff as a constituent. And I can't support an amendment that will make it more challenging to register to vote. And although we don't think of it as challenge, because those of us who deal with government documents all the time are very familiar and fluid, having spent 20 years registering seniors in high school, if they weren't already registered when the automatic voter registration came around, and most of my career was prior to that, I would periodically encounter a senior who'd say, I'm not registering to vote because I don't want to ever be called to jury. And it was always a great thing to say, well, good for you. If you get a PFD, that's where the jury roster comes from, because there are far more Alaskan adults who are receiving PFDs than are registered to vote. And I don't think that's a good thing. I want every eligible Alaskan registered to vote, motivated to vote. This doesn't make them a voter. It makes them eligible to be a voter. And I don't want to make it less restrictive, so I cannot support the amendment.
Okay, Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And I do believe, is Division of Elections still on the line?
They are.
Just so they could put it through on the record, Chair. Ms. Beecher, can we register to vote online with the Division of Elections?
Ms. Beecher.
For the record, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections. I'm sorry, Representative Ballard, through the Chair, could you repeat that question? There is a voice on the phone.
Yes. Could we register to vote online with Division of Elections?
Through the Chair, Representative Allard, yes. Individuals can register to vote online.
Thank you, Ms. Beecher. So through Chair, I'm going to support this amendment because I don't know of any other state that has the permanent fund dividend where you can just go online and register to vote. I think there's a lot of security issues on that as well. And we're putting our information pretty much everywhere. So if we have the ability to file for a dividend online, we have the ability to go register to vote if we can't at a DMV because it's not right next door or down the road or some situations 20 miles from us and we're remote living, then we can always go online with the Division of Elections. So thank you.
Okay. I've got Representative Bynum and then staff. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the Chair, Mr. Dunsmore, can you clarify again what we currently have as far as the process goes? Right now, this is asking for a opt-in as opposed to an automatic register in. So if I'm newly registering to vote, newly registering for the permanent fund dividend, it's going to register me to vote. If I'm coming back to redo my dividend, is it having me register to update my registration at that point? And if so, am I clearly opting out or saying, no, I don't want to do that? I don't remember. I just went through this dividend application. I just really don't remember. But I'm just trying to figure out, you know, weigh the balance of how deliberative is the process when I go into the program and actually file.
Mr. Dunsmore?
Through the Chair, Representative Bynum, for the record, David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilikowski. I actually just applied for my PFD last week intentionally to make myself as up to speed on this form as possible. It currently, you get a window, or not a window, you get a one of the screens, that, you know, the application process goes in stages where you provide certain data, and one of the screens is telling you about the updating and explaining that if you giving you the opportunity of opting out of updating your registration or providing a different residence address from the physical address you've provided. And then Carol Beecher, Director Beecher, can probably better explain the process from the divisions end, but they when people update their registration through this system, they are mailed a notice informing them that they're being registered to vote at that new address and giving them, I believe, 45 days to opt out at that point as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum?
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah, this one is a tough amendment for me in the sense that I support conceptually the idea that we always want the option to opt in. I've never been a big fan of automatics for this, but I also want to make sure that every eligible Alaskan that wants to be a registered voter has easy access and an opportunity to make that happen. Don't want any barriers for anyone to be able to register to vote, whether that's through the DMV, going directly on the Division of Elections, going to their local clerk's office, or even through the permanent fund application process. So philosophically, I'm in favor of an opt-in feature, But I also understand the sponsor's concerns that he has with this particular element. So appreciate the maker of the amendment bringing this forward, and I'll just have to consider the rest of the debate. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Representative Stapp and then more Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster. If you just permit me to go to Director Beecher really quickly.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair to Director Beecher. I do kind of want to run this down to the conclusion since where it's germane to the amendment, right? So my reason for voting yes is because of, you know, that question on the application online. It's like, what's your physical address, right? So obviously live down here in Juneau, so it's not unreasonable to put a Juneau address, and then you miss the opt-out box, or you're automatically updating your voter registration, and that changes that to this jurisdiction. So the staff to the senator kind of brought up that might have changed. Did that change through the chair to Director Beecher, is that still how it works when you do the application?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Staff, so the process that happens is that if you are applying for your permanent fund dividend for the first time, then you are will be automatically registered to vote if you don't respond to the notice that we send. We send out a notice to first-time applicants, and we also send out a notice if your residential address has been updated. And for both of those, you can opt out if you want it changed or not. So as regards the what the form looks like online, actually, I just have the paper in front of me, and I filled mine out, but I don't remember. It sounds like Mr. Dunsmore recently did his, and that they have changed the wording to make sure that it's consistent with residential address. But I would direct that question to him on what the actual verbiage is.
Follow-up.
Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So if I say, here, I'm in Juneau right now, I haven't done my application this year, if I put my Juneau address, it's not where I reside. Technically, it's where I reside for session, but not where I reside fully, right, obviously, like everyone else down here. And I miss that little opt-out button on the little checkbox for the, do you want to update your voter registration? I mean, wouldn't you at the Division of Elections take that and change my physical address to Juneau rather than Fairbanks through the chair if I missed that button?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, my understanding of the way the permanent fund application works is that there is not a button for you to determine that. You have to get an official letter and reply from a letter from the division, and then you reply to that. So it is not, you cannot on the application opt out of being registered to vote. You have to get the notice from the division, and the same thing for a change of your residential. It requires the division to send you a notice, which you can then opt out to that notice.
Representative Stout.
Sorry, Mr. Co-Chair. That is not how that works, though, right? Like, you fill up the PFD, it asks you your address, and then the next screen's like, do you want to update your voter information? And you got to uncheck the box because it'll automatically populate to that. And I don't think you guys ever sent me anything. So just FYI, if that's how it's supposed to work, I'm pretty sure we found out when we went to go do the primary election. But I don't know if that solves anything today, but that's we should probably run that to ground. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go to Representative Moore, and then we'll follow up with the sponsor. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I think my question is for Mr. Dunsmore, and maybe for Director Beecher. But so just for clarification, there is no opt-out when you're applying – when you're applying for your dividend, and I'm embarrassed to even say this because I have six kids and I'm on this thing a lot. I mean, you know, ran through it a lot here. And so I just am not familiar with the page, I guess. And so when I get to the voter registration, there is no option to just not be registered to vote.
Mr. Dunsmore.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, I believe that is correct for an initial registration, but for updating your registration, there is an opt-out box. And as I described. There's also a window that gives you an option to provide a residence address that is different from your physical address and explains in relatively plain English that how your voter registration will be updated and the opportunity to provide an alternative residence address.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up.
Okay, so initial registration happens. All my information gets sent to the Division of Elections. I'm registered to vote. Based on what information, I mean, I would have to go through steps and say what, you know, my party affiliation and all those things, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Moore, for the record, David Dunsmore. My understanding is the division for people who register through any means that does not have a form for political affiliation. So this would also be like registering at the DMV or another voter registration agency. Your political affiliation would be listed as undeclared if you had not previously registered elsewhere, because undeclared is the status of that they have not had the record of that voter declaring an affiliation.
Okay. Thank you for that information.
Okay. Senator Wilikowski, Mr. Dunsmore, any further comments on amendment number one?
Well, Mr. Chair, Bill Wilikowski for the record, this is a delicate balance, and this is something that upsets that balance. And there's also a witness signature amendment that may be coming next, and I'm going to oppose that one too. And that's something that I really support, but it upsets the delicate balance that we've crafted in getting this bill, this good government bill, going forward. And so I would suggest that members vote no. Thank you.
Okay. We've got wrap up, Representative Tomaszewski.
Where do I begin? Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Appreciate that. So the overall intent of this amendment is trying to make it easier on the Division of Elections. And to make it easier on the residents of Alaska, we have every year tens of thousands of applications that are rejected for reasons such as residency issue, excessive absences. We had a comment in the debate here that applying for your PFD makes you eligible to vote. It absolutely does not. Does not make you eligible to vote. Just because you apply for this PFD, it does not make you eligible to vote. What the opt-out does is really it undermines the intentional participation in voting. We want intentional participation. Requiring an affirmative opt-out rather than opt-in registers people who may not want to be involved. They may not want to have their information sent from the DOR to the Division of Elections. They are concerned about the integrity of that information and how it can be leaked out. I absolutely want as many eligible Alaskans to vote as possible. That is, I would like to see everybody vote. Everyone who is eligible, eligible citizen of Alaska, citizen of the United States, who resides and meets all the criteria for being a registered voter, I want them all to vote. I think that would be, you know, that would be terrific. But we have an issue with this particular provision in voting law that really adds a lot of manual work to the division. You're sending opt-out notices. They are handling updates, verifying eligibility flags, like citizenship status. We're talking about whether we're a resident, whether we intend to be a resident. I mean, there is so much work that goes into this that I would much rather like to see an opt-in, because that really creates intentional participation in our voting system. And, you know, I want to make it easier on the Division of Election. The Division of Election has a really hard job. And to add to that or to change it so close to election is would be tough. But with this amendment, I believe we can make it easier on the division. And I'm somewhat surprised to hear that, you know, this bill was had bipartisan support and a delicate balance that can't be changed. I mean, we're going through the committee process, and part of that committee process is we've been elected by our voters, and we need to, you know, see that we represent as many, you know, as we can to the best of our ability. And so I think healthy debate on this is great. And I think, you know, it is really a good thing to hear the different diversity of thought and how a particular issue pertains to the vote and how we're doing it here. So I hope you support this. I think it's going to make it easier for the Division of Elections, and I think it creates a system of intentional voters, and it really creates an ease for the division to actually do their job. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. And so with that, Representative Josephson, do you maintain your objection to Amendment Number 1?
I do.
Okay, the objection is maintained. So, Madam Clerk, if we could call the roll on Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 64.
Representative Jimmy?
No.
Representative Allard?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Moore?
No.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Bynum?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Shragi?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
3 yea, 8 nay.
And so on a vote of 3 yea to 8 nay, Amendment Number 1 has not been adopted. We're going to take a 3-minute Eddie's. Probably.
Yeah, let's move it.
Okay, House Finance back on record here at 3:39 p.m. I'm going to do my classic slow roll. I think that'll get folks here once we're gaveled back in, but I'll stall for a little bit of time. I think we are at amendment number 3, and so we are going to give it another moment and let folks kind of stream back in here. But when we do go back to amendment number 3, that's going to be Representative Bynum's amendment. And I plan to allow an introduction, and then I think we're going to hear a little bit from Senator Wilikowski. So I'm just going to give it another moment here and let folks stream back in. And so another minute. And would you mind just checking to see if some of our other folks are making it back in there, Mr. Anderson? Would you mind grabbing me another? Thanks. Cup of, yes, thanks. I don't know what I did with my other. Half, yeah, thanks. How you doing, Representative Stapp? We're on record, by the way.
I know we're on the record. I'm waiting to. What are we doing right now, Chair?
I thought I would gavel in because that would encourage people to come back, and I think we just have one more person, and then it'll be okay here. Let's see. I think we have a point of clarification, Representative Hannon.
Yes, Co-Chair Foster, if the Snow Classics bill that I have sponsored had been moving in the Senate, we would all be taking guesses of the snow depth in Juneau and hoping that we're breaking a record in the next 48 hours.
Is this a spinoff of the Nenana Classic, something along those lines?
It is very similar, only it's on depth of snow.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
If only we could add that to this bill too, Mr. Yes, Co-Chair.
It's already over in the Senate, so we don't need that. We just need the Senate to move it so that a nonprofit group of skiers could be selling us raffle tickets guessing the depth of snow.
Do we have we heard from Representative Shragi? We're going to take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 3:44 p.m. And we next have Amendment Number 3, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move Amendment Number 3.
Okay, and I'll object for purpose of discussion, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Amendment Number 3 requires the Division of Elections to establish a voter signature verification system for absentee ballots. There's an effective date for that provision of July 1, 2026, correction 2027. That's it also removes the requirement for a witness signature on the absentee ballot. So the original intent of this amendment was to specifically do what more than 40% of Alaskans are already doing in their local municipal elections, and that is to have a ballot when they do vote by absentee ballot, to have a ballot that does not require a witness signature. Now, one might ask why removing the witness signature is an important element of this particular amendment, and it's because currently under law, the witness signature is only a performative act that is not actually enforced by any verification by the Division of Elections. Nor is the current signature on a ballot, signature on an absentee ballot verified for every ballot that is submitted to the division. Like I was mentioning, 40% of folks that are voting in Anchorage and also the communities of, 40% of Alaskans that vote, that would be those Alaskans in the community of Juneau and of Anchorage, use the signature verification signature system, making the need for a witness signature unnecessary. Currently, right now in the United States, there are 21 states that use signature matching and curing process in place. There are 9 states that have signature matching in place for their absentee ballots and have no or limited curing in place. There are 10 states that have a witness signature requirement, but 3 of those are by notary only. And there are 10 states, including plus DC, that require a signature on the ballot only. This would require the Division of Elections to provide and procure and or lease through partnerships with municipal governments that have this machinery, the equipment necessary to do the signature verification. When I've talked to other members about this and the efforts to have a signature verification process in place, most of the pushback that I've heard on this has been with regard to the fiscal note necessary to procure the initial equipment. Everybody I've talked to has recognized that this provides a secure method for validating that an absentee ballot is by the person that signed the document. When that signature can't be validated, there is a process in place to cure that ballot, to ensure that that person gets to vote. And I'm offering the amendment because I believe it is the most secure way to validate absentee ballots without disenfranchising anyone due to a missing witness signature, as they would no longer be necessary. And with that, I'd like to hear from, if it's possible, Co-Chair Foster, the senator, and his staff that are here, and get their thoughts on this particular element.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to recognize that we have with us Representative Underwood. Thanks for joining us here in House Finance today. Senator Wilikowski, thoughts on Amendment Number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski. Representative Bynum, appreciate you bringing forward this amendment. Appreciate your advocacy for this issue and for fair elections in general. As I've mentioned, we have come in the last 10 years to the last day of session trying to pass a major elections bill, election reform. We all recognize that election reform has to happen. There are certain things that just have to be fixed. The reason that it's failed, though, for the last 10 years is because there are certain issues that we just can't get bipartisan compromise on. And what we did again with this bill was to put aside things that we could not come to agreement on and crafted a bill that we think moves us forward as a state. It doesn't go as far as I would like. It doesn't go as far as others would like, but it moves us forward, I believe. This amendment, I personally support. However, I cannot support it for this bill, Mr. Chairman, respectfully. And I can't support it because I think it will result in the ultimate failure of the bill. And it was not part of the bipartisan package that we've put together. I would urge you to propose this bill again, maybe next year. I would also note, Mr. Chairman, that a similar version of this proposal was introduced about 3 years ago and had over a $5 million fiscal note. So it's not an inexpensive thing to do, but I would respectfully suggest the body or the committee not support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. My intention, I've been talking to quite a few people about this. I believe in this concept. I believe in this amendment. I believe that if there is a $5 million or a $6 million fiscal note associated with it, that it is well worth having that. Because I believe that the current system that we have right now with our signature and then the witness signature, I don't believe that it is the most secure system we have. I believe that it creates an opportunity for mistakes. I also don't believe that it actually makes it more secure. And so I would hope that as we move forward, Co-Chair Foster and committee, that we would take a real serious look at how we can make our elections obviously more secure, but also more open and ensure that every vote that is legitimately cast is counted. I was going to take the opportunity to withdraw the amendment, but I didn't know if you wanted to give the indulgence to any other members to maybe make a comment before I did so.
Representative Stapp, did you have – it looked like you wanted to say something that would go to Representative Allard and Jimmy. Representative Stapp.
You know, I think it would be interesting exercise, actually, Co-Chair, if I could move to divide the question so you could take up both of the two issues in the amendments on their own merits. But given the indication of the bill of the amendment sponsor to withdraw the amendment, I don't think I'm going to do that. So because the amendment does cover two separate things. One is the removal of the witness signature, and two is the replacement with a different verification structure. And I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. I don't support this amendment at all, and I don't think it's performative. I know what we do in the municipality of Anchorage, and you can't sign the witness signature as Donald Duck because we will reevaluate that, and that will not pass. So thank you. I'm not in support.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Amendment 3, where do I begin? My 18-year-old daughter is not legally – she can vote for the first time this year, and her signature isn't going to change. It looks different. I mean, we all know, we all see our kids sign their names, and they always change. Under this system, that is grounds to reject her ballot. Other states tried this, but the rejection rates went down for some voters. It went up for some voters, specifically the young and the elderly, and anyone else's signature who has changed. We know this is going on because stuff happens. The regulations haven't been written. The cost hasn't been estimated. Instead of fixing the rejection problem, we're handing it to a different group of voters. Now, in Washington State, voters age from 18 to 24 represented fewer than 10% of accepted ballots, but 40% of the signature mismatch caused for rejections. And the youngest Latino voters' mismatch rate was nearly twice of that their non-Latino peers. In Florida, Black and Hispanic voters were twice as likely to have their ballots rejected as white voters, and younger voters were also more likely to be rejected than older voters. In California, young voters between the ages of 18 and 24 were most likely to have their ballot rejected due to mismatched signatures, in part because many registered at 16 and their signatures changed by the time they voted, and many were never taught cursive. So I'd like to ask the maker of the amendment, I noticed you're right-handed and you sign with your right hand. What happens if you injure your right hand and you go to vote when it's due? Do you think your signature would align up with what you signed on with?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Appreciate the question. If in some instance my ability to sign normally was impaired or I was unable to do that, I would likely go down to the my clerk's office and or go to the Division of Elections and re-register to vote with a new signature to ensure that my signature would match. Or I would use the carrying process in place, or I would go use a question ballot. So that would be what I would recommend for folks, that if that unfortunate event where they're unable to sign, that's what I would do.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. Well, in my district, we would have to fly, and of course, you can't register, you can't get all this access right away. As you well know, you represent rural areas as well, so I think you would understand that part too. So, what if you were in a rural area and you are voting?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, Representative Jimmy. You know, I would do everything in my power to, this particular element at hand is specifically for the purposes of an absentee ballot, which you have to request. And technically already in law, we're required to have a signature on record with the Division of Election for the purposes of registration. And when we go to the polls, we are required to sign a book that has our signature on it. And so the idea of having to have a valid signature on record is something that we've already well established. And within the state of Alaska, 40% of voters already use the system in some form or fashion for voting, including 30 states in the country. So, I mean, at the end of the day, my goal for offering this amendment was to provide a mechanism for which that we could remove a witness signature requirement without putting in place the issues of people worried about the security of the absentee ballot.
Yes, last follow-up.
Representative Jim.
Signature verification is different from a required signature. And did I hear you correctly that you said you withdrew this amendment just a while ago?
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I had told the co-chair that Representative Jamie, I told the co-chair that my intention was to withdraw this amendment so that it wouldn't be moving forward. I wanted to bring it forward to make not only our body but the public aware that there are other opportunities out there to make our elections more secure, and that would be what I would like to do. So I did not intend on putting this to a vote. I did intend to withdraw it. At the discretion of the chair to give him an opportunity for the members to comment on the bill, on the amendment, if they would so like.
Okay. Representative Eller, did you still have a question or comment?
No, I do. As a Latina American, whatever. We had more Latinas and Latino show up Hispanic than ever before in the 2024 election. So I just want to make sure that we're really careful what we say about other cultures. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. At this time, I withdraw Amendment Number 3.
Amendment Number 3 has been withdrawn. Okay. Do we have any other amendments, Representative Eller?
Thank you. Chair, I'd like to move Amendment Number 7.
Do we have Amendment Number 7 in our packets? First of all, is there an objection?
Object.
We have an objection. Thank you very much.
We're going to pass out right now.
Let's take a break. Actually, I don't think this will take long.
I appreciate your freewheeling style, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. I try. Briefities.
Oh,
Okay, House Finance back on record at 3:59 p.m. And Representative Allard, you have amendment number 7. It's been moved and objected. Representative Allard, would you like to speak to your amendment?
I will. So I have a 10-page amendment here, and I probably have over 60 changes to it. There's a lot of things clearly I disagree with in the bill, and I've been thinking long and hard about this. But I think, Chair, what I'm going to go ahead and say is that I appreciate what the senator, the sponsor of the bill, Senator Wilkowski, is doing. And out of respect to Senator Wilkowski, he has mentioned several times that we could take this up in a different type of a bill by itself. And this bill, or this amendment, I believe, could take over days, even a week, to go through with amendments to the amendments. And so I will go ahead and withdraw my amendment and look at a future date of perhaps bringing it forward as a bill.
Okay, thank you. Amendment number 7 has been withdrawn. So with that, we are at the conclusion of our amendment process. I want to just circle back before I entertain a motion to move the bill, see if any members of the committee have questions for the bill sponsor, and if not, I would entertain a motion. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. One of the questions I have about this bill is the term residence. Is there a clear definition of residence that pertains to this bill?
Senator, or Mr. Dunsmore. Dunsmore.
Through the chair, for the record, David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilkowski. Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, in the version of this bill as it passed out of the Senate, there were updates to Alaska's residency laws. Some of the discussions and issues that were raised with some of the new language during last year's hearings on this bill, those provisions were removed. So Alaska's, the definition of residency would be unchanged. Alaska's residency laws are fairly similar to, for voting purposes, are fairly similar to voting laws, residency definitions used in other states, that there have been concerns that the phrase that used currently about an intent to return is vague, and there was language included in the original version of this bill to attempt to clarify that. In a bill introduced by the governor, they also attempted to clarify it. There were problems identified with the way they did, and did that, as well as problems identified at the way that was done in this bill. And after the discussion in this committee last year, the determination was to leave the residency definition as it was for the committee substitutes.
You know, follow
up? Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, and that's kind of my concern as well. And it really, it's the intents to return. I just, how long does that, I mean, can I intend to, can I go move to Florida and play golf, 50 weeks out of the year and come back to Alaska for 2 weeks and still consider myself a resident that I intend to someday return? Where does that line get drawn? I'm very curious on that.
Senator Wilkowski.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, it's a great question. We wrestled with that, and we tried to come up with a solution for it. The governor tried to come up with a solution for it. It proved to be very challenging. We looked at every state in the country and see how they did it. We tried to craft it after other states, and ultimately what we decided was to really focus, and I could draw your attention to Section 4 on page 3 of the bill. And what we ultimately decided to do was to say, well, if you register to vote in another state, if you get a driver's license in another state, if you register a vehicle in another state, receive public assistance in another state, serve on a jury in another state, get a property tax exemption in another state, get benefits only available to residents in another state, that will raise red flags for the division. And we want to be careful because we have people in the state who go to school outside of the state. We have people in the state who serve in the military. We want to be very careful we don't exclude them. We have people in the state who have vacation homes and go outside to warmer locations. So it just proved to be extremely challenging. And ultimately what we decided was to come up with these criteria that we think would help us remove people who we don't think will come to the state, come back to the state.
Yeah, follow up.
Representative Tomaszewski.
So in this particular section, do you know if are any of those provisions A through G, will they, if I am registered to vote in another state, do I lose my ability to vote in a state of Alaska?
Mr. Densmore.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, David Densmore for the record. Under the Federal National Voter Registration Act, it limits the ways that someone can be automatically removed. And unfortunately, how it's written, merely registering to vote in another state is not a criteria that allows automatic registration or automatic removal. Actually voting in another state is. So that is why in this bill it's included in because in order to comply with the National Voter Registration Act, we have to send a notice giving the voter a chance to confirm they still wish to remain an active Alaska voter. They will not, in compliance with the federal law, they don't lose their Alaska residence immediately upon registering in another state, but registering in another state will trigger Alaska's ability to send that notice.
Okay. And so following up on that, so just because I registered to vote in another state does not necessarily mean that I will be taken off the voter rolls. And I guess it's with all these other provisions also, A through G, they have a driver's license in another state or a registered vehicle in another state. I mean, just because I have a registered vehicle doesn't mean I'm going to be pulled off of the voter rolls. Receive public assistance from another state. I would think that just qualifying for public assistance from another state would make you a resident of another state. So I don't know if you could be multiple resident. It's just very, I'm glad you have this bill because it's very confusing on how we can actually be eligible or not eligible with all these provisions in current law, serving on a jury in another state and receiving a residential, Mr. Densmore, can I ask you about F, provision F on that section, received a homestead or residential property tax exemption. So would that still only trigger a contact me and ask me if I still want to be a voter? And then if I say yes, I still am a Alaska voter.
Mr. Densmore.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, that is correct. Again, under the National Voter Registration Act, these are not criteria that would allow Alaska to remove without sending the notice. So this bill does two things. One, it adds these criteria of indicators that someone has established residency in another state to the list that the Division of Elections will use for sending cleanup notices. Under current law, those criteria are not ground. So currently, if someone registers to vote in another state, but they recently moved so that they've still voted or contacted the division within the last 2 years, Alaska currently we'd have to wait either for that person to actively cancel their own registration or for that person to miss voting for two general election cycles before being sent that notice. Additionally, this expedites the process. Currently, under Alaska law, we send first a non-forwardable notice to someone, and then if we don't hear confirmation from them that they wish to remain registered, we send them a second forwardable notice. This bill streamlines the process to only send that one forwardable notice, which is what's required by the National Voter Registration Act.
All very confusing stuff. Follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Tomaszewski.
Have you spoke to the Department of Law, Criminal Division, on a basic question whether Alaskan residence requires both physical habitation and intent, or can intent alone be enough?
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski. Intent is enough. You don't have to be physically present in the state. And we believe, as far as we could in compliance with federal law to ensure that people who we don't think live here, who trigger these things, there is a process to remove them from the voter rolls. We think we went as far as we could. This was something that we worked with the Division of Elections on, this language. The governor had language that was similar in bills that he introduced. But we are constrained to some degree by federal law.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for the sponsor? Okay, seeing none and hearing no further amendments, Representative Shiragi, I would entertain a motion if you would like.
Co-Chair Foster, I move Senate Bill 64, Work Order 34-LS0153/B out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay.
We have an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection? Okay, Representative Stapp, would you like to speak to the no? Okay. Any other comments before we go to a vote? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, we are going to ask for a call and a vote, and this will be on SB 64, version B, as amended. Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Shiragi.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
9 yea, 2 nay.
And so on a vote of 9 yea to 2 nay, Senate Bill 64, which is 34-LS0153/B, moves out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And with that, if folks can be sure once we gavel out to sign the yellow sheet before you leave. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 23rd. Mr. Anderson, do we still need that meeting? Because I think we were intending to have that meeting. Maybe there might be some pending, or not pending, but possibly previously heard briefities. Do we want to keep Monday or not? House Finance back on record at 4:13 p.m. And so we are going to go ahead and keep our Monday morning meeting. That's March 23rd at 9 a.m. We may cancel. We'll let folks know if that's the case. And if that is the case, then the meeting following that will be at 1:30 on that same day. And at the 1:30 meeting, we do know that for sure we will be having our first hearing on House Bill 133, that is payment of contracts. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, again, if folks can just be sure to stick around to sign the yellow sheet, and we'll be adjourned at 4:13 p.m. Thank you.